there, fellow adventurers. I am Jason Conforto.
And I'm Tyler Crump, and we are hosts of a podcast, Adventure AI, where we play Dungeons & Dragons with an AI named Alex the Language Lord.
I'm Alex the Language Lord. Join us as we craft epic tales together.
Do you want to learn how to use AI in your D&D campaign?
Or how AI can force you to do things that you don't want to do? Wait a second, we don't like that.
Look no further. Adventure AI is the podcast for all your AI-powered D&D adventures.
Alex the Language Lord not only comes up with campaigns for us,
he also helps us create our characters, create our backstories, and even give us some fun magical items.
And really takes all of the human aspects out of Dungeons & Dragons. So it's not really playing at all.
Follow Adventure AI on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.
All right, welcome to Mulling It Over without Brandon Mull.
Yeah.
So this is our mutiny episode against Brandon Mull.
He's
so as promised, we are going to be giving you more content. And because of that, we're going to have some episodes without Brandon. So I'll be your host today, Jason Conforto. And I am joined with my two co-hosts, Chad Morris and Shelley Brown.
Yeah.
Welcome, welcome. And we are... and we have a guest, so you don't have to listen to the three of us again. So,
yeah, that would be bad.
Kayla Rivera.
Hola, everybody. Hi,
welcome to the show. Thanks for being here. So we're going to get to know a little bit about Kayla today and her background and whatnot. And so I think we just want to start just hearing your story a little bit, like what got you interested in becoming an author? I understand that was at a pretty young age.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, I guess it starts quite early, really, because I was actually really bad at writing. I loved stories. I was like the kind of strange little feral child in the middle of Tennessee mm-hmm. who would like go and sharpen the bamboo in her backyard and create bows and arrows and then go into the forest like, I will find, today will be the day I will find a dragon and I will slay it.
Love it.
Loved stories, you know, loved stories, but I had a really hard time with the actual writing part of mm-hmm. being able to record a story and share it. Because I don't know what it was, whether it was the combo of having to just sit still that long or translate what I guess was like complex thought into mere words.
Yeah, yeah. How old were you at this time? What are we talking?
Somewhere between like 5 and 7,
I guess. Yeah, 5, I think that's
really early.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you couldn't write coherence
yet?
What's wrong with your dragon?
Well, who invited her on this show?
Oh, gosh. Get her out of here, man.
First manuscript by 4 or you're out.
But I just remember, because I had trouble sitting down and doing schoolwork generally, and especially writing was like my least favorite. And reading, I kept being like, I don't think I'm going to ever be able to do this. You know, it was like as the grades went on, I was like, I think I'm the worst at this, actually. It may even be exaggerated in my memory, but I remember the physical pain
I felt
trying to write. And my mom, who is a lovely mother and wise, kind of sat down with me one day and she was like, I'm worried about you. And what I want you to come out of this knowing that you can do difficult things. That's what I'm worried about here. So every day you're going to sit down and you're going to write. And I was like, what?
No.
And she's like, yeah, extra writing. Every day you're going to have to write 3 lines. And I was like, 3 lines? You monster.
That's not the dragon I wanted to face.
Exactly. I was like, no, anything but 3 lines. But over time, like, and she was relentless in this. And she was like, it will take as long as you take. That's all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can be real fast if you make it fast. And I was like, ah.
Did she have the same lines for finishing dinner and that kind of stuff too?
No.
It's as long.
Yeah. I mean, they were really big lines too. Like I found them the other day and I was like, oh, this giant, you know, she was being generous, but it was really tough for me for like weeks and months until slowly having to do the thing I hated the most every day slowly made me realize, I guess this isn't that bad. And then I was like, one day I was like, you know what? I'm not actually done. I have more to say.
Oh, nice.
And so then I started writing more and more and more. And then I was like, hold on. One day it clicked. I was like, this is a great way of getting my stories captured so people can read them even when I'm not around to regale them about the dragon who keeps evading me. And
cornering people and being like, I've got a story to tell you.
One time I had a cousin even visit, and I had never met this cousin before, and he came and was like, hi, and I handed him my writing instead. My mom was like, you can't do that. Say hello.
This is how my people say hello. Yes. My people being authors.
There is nothing more valuable I could say than this.
Here's my card. Yeah. Or story.
Yeah. Same deal. Exactly.
So your mom noticed that you wanted to be able to write, but were frustrated that you couldn't.
Yeah.
And so she was seeing that frustration and kind of added this to your life outside of school or any recommendation there. Mm-hmm. Now, when you said you had to write three lines, did she write and you had to copy those lines, or she's just like, you have to come up?
I have to come up with it every day. Yeah. And I think that was one of the hardest things where I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know. The weather is sad today.
So your first story was pretty early.
Yes, actually, my very first story, once I had kind of gotten over this hump and was like, you know, this is kind of fun, actually, was a little picture book called Sally the Sea Serpent.
Do you mm-hmm. still own this picture book?
I do.
You can't even, it's a podcast.
You can't see it.
Dang it.
And it's illustrated by me, too.
Oh, nice.
But then what's your first one that you were like, this one's going to make me millions?
Yeah.
Because it probably wasn't Sally, even though
it wasn't Sally, but I loved Sally. Yeah. And the many, many picture books thereafter that all included a shopping scene for some reason.
Wait, the sea serpent went shopping?
Yeah,
I just sorry really I said that questioningly.
Obviously, where else is she going to get food, Chad?
I don't know. I'm interested in Sally the Sea Serpent. I think this is interesting.
Yeah, there was even a sequel, Sally the Sea Serpent Meets Fred, and they get married.
Oh, whoa. Was Fred a serpent as well?
He was.
From
he
the
was
sea?
Purple, oh, and okay. Sally was cream, and I don't exactly know where I got that, but you know, they didn't even look like actual sea serpents at all, but
okay.
Somewhere between a snail and a snake, and you know, right. I had it down,
awesome.
Though.
Yeah.
But the first one that I was like, I think I'm a genius.
Exactly. That's the one.
That was at 10 years old, and that was an actual like book. Like, it made it past like stapled together pages mm-hmm. kind of thing. And I don't remember how many words it actually was, but it was several chapters, and it was called Shinar of Boxatrin.
Oh, my goodness.
Ah.
Whipping out the awesome names.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And honestly, at the beginning, I'm still quite charmed by the kind of thought at the beginning is of people who live sequestered in these woods, and there's a cursed girl, like, living far off from them, who has a little animal that fetches used books. That's its whole thing. And it's all quite charming in the beginning.
Honestly, if this was my 10-year-old, I'd be like, you're destined for greatness.
You are a genius.
I would be.
And then somewhere, like, after that first quarter, it just veers sideways into just being, like, a Harry Potter ripoff.
Oh, sure. And probably literally, right, where you got sucked into a story and you were reliving that story through your writing.
Yes, where I was like, okay. You know, what do I like? I like Harry Potter. So that out of absolutely nowhere, they're going to the magic school, and instead of Voldemort, it's a vampire.
Yeah,
Hogwarts. Sheena goes to Hogwarts, and it's not Voldemort, it's Vampireman.
So at what point were you like, I want to do this as a career?
Well, that actually came, like, that was sort of the moment where I was like, oh my gosh, I wrote a book, mm-hmm. you know. But I was quite plagued at that age with, you know, I had an older sister who, being 6 years older than me, I just thought that, like, she was better at everything. I didn't realize that she'd also lived 6 more years than me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm not even good at this, though. I don't know. Everything she writes is so much better.
Right.
The teenager.
Yeah.
You know, but then at Fort, the bug never left me where I was like, I still love doing this. If I could do it once, maybe I can do it again and I'll be better. And so I kept trying to write little things, but it was at 14 that I sat down and wrote like a full length manuscript. And I was like, this is as good as Twilight. I'm going to get it published.
And was it as good as Twilight?
When I go back, I'm like, honestly, the plot may be kind of the same level of, you know, at first it kind of makes sense and then it veers out of nowhere. But, but like, you know, she wrote the emotions better. I'll say that.
Yeah. But a full manuscript at 14.
Yeah. A full manuscript. And I think that was the moment where I was like, oh my gosh, I did it again.
Mm-hmm.
And if I did it again, if I did it again, I can probably keep doing this.
were you thinking like your Twilight type book? Were you thinking this is ready to pitch and be published? Or were you thinking, hey, I did it and I'm going to do it again and it's going to get better and I'm going to do it again? At what point were you like, oh, I'm ready to like send this out and see if the world wants it?
Yeah, I did not have the humility to or wisdom to think I need to keep going
right.
and improving. I was like, I am a genius. I was like, this is at least as good as Twilight. I can publish this. And
did you send it out?
Well, this is where I encountered sort of the steepness of the learning curve where I was like, I want to get this published. I can do this. I've done it twice. How do you do that?
Yeah.
And then I was like, and you know, the internet was a thing at that point. So that was good. So I was researching things, but there wasn't a lot of actual resources on there. I figured out through some combing and difficult context gathering process
that you hadn't discovered the Mulling It Over podcast yet to give you advice.
Really didn't exist
would have given
yet.
You all the answers.
There's a genius 14-year-old who will appreciate this the way I would have.
Querytracker.net.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that changed my life. But I was out there trying to figure things out and I was like, okay, they keep talking about queries. They keep talking about agents. And I did like everything wrong that you can possibly do. Like everything they warn you not to do. I did all of them.
Yeah.
You know, like a very orderly ladder of don't do that.
Yeah, rattle off some of those don't do things.
Yeah, let's relive your mistakes.
Yeah. And then we'll laugh at each one that you did.
Really rub it in there. Okay, well, one of the first ones is that I also didn't do like any edits on my book. Which is a problem I had for many manuscripts where I was like, no, this is good. I believe in myself. And I'm glad I had that.
First draft, best draft.
Yeah.
We're watching Wednesday Addams, and she's got a manuscript, and she's like, I will not touch a word of it.
It is fantastic now as it is. Exactly. That level of like, no, I believe in it. Stands on its own merit. But I sent out the first query I ever sent out. I don't even know where I found the agent, but I found something that looked like an agent website. Picked him. I didn't even check what he takes. You know?
Right. Because why would that be important?
Yeah, I was like, he's an agent. He takes books. Yeah. This is a book.
He will recognize my genius.
Yeah, he'll know. He'll see. But then my mom was like, wait, but what if he steals your idea? Because she also knew nothing about it. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're right.
Oh no.
You're right. You know what? We'll make an encoded letter instead and be like, I have this idea. It's kind of like this. The manuscript is written. Let me know if you want to see more. Yeah.
You can sign an NDA. Yeah.
And then I'll tell you about this great story with magical people in it. And like I never got a response.
No.
Surprising.
In hindsight, I was like, yeah, that's deserved. Yeah. Poor man.
But then where did you veer from there to like something was actually picked up? What is that in between?
Well, the in between then became like I am sort of like bottled chaos, generally
adorable
speaking.
Bottled chaos.
Thank you. I hope there's a redeeming quality. But I just kind of uncorked the bottle and was like, well, if that one didn't work, and then just like jumped into another manuscript. And I did that manuscript after manuscript after manuscript. And there was more and more resources online. So then I started to send more and more out. So every manuscript, I would just be like, here are the same 20 agents, here are now 50 agents, here are now 100 agents. You know, I would just like blast query. My queries, though, because I was writing so many, got better and better.
Oh. Just like your lines.
Yeah, yes, just like my lines, bit by bit.
Step by step.
And the cool thing that happened, but also a problem, was that my marketing, like writing skills were getting great, but I wasn't revising my manuscripts. Mm-hmm. So like some of the high level skills weren't getting there, but my line work was getting pretty, really good. And there was one I remember I sent out because it was one of the most embarrassing things I've received back in rejections, where I sent one out, and this was like a werewolf thing, you know, and it's kind of, you know, just a Twilight ripoff, you know, but like with more mind control and strange.
That's what Twilight
scary
needed.
Scary shapeshifter babies. Yeah. as you do. And I sent this one out, and my queries were like pretty top tier by that point, but my work was not at the same level as my query was, right? So, you know, I basically deceived them where I was like, wow, this, hey, look at this, she really polished.
Yeah.
And then they read and were like, oh.
Yeah, she can't edit.
Who wrote her query?
Oh, no, yeah. Who did she hire? And I got this one back. And, you know, at first she was nice, like, thank you for sharing this with me. And it was my first full request. I think that's why I remembered it. I was like, oh, and I think I was like maybe 17, 18 at that point.
That's,
thanks.
Yeah, we should pause.
Yeah,
just,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just to say,
point this out, Chad.
For those of you who are listening, first of all, for a 14-year-old to finish
a manuscript
is awesome.
Because there's plenty of 50-year-olds out there who wish that they had finished their manuscripts.
And right? There are plenty of 14-year-olds who have started a manuscript.
Yeah.
But finishing
but
one.
But to finish, I mean, even though you didn't edit yet, right? At that
no
point.
No concept of it even.
It's still amazing and amazing. And to be querying, to have written multiple and to be querying at 17, I mean, this is
it doesn't sound like a fast track. I think to some kids, they're like, how many years was that? But it is a fast track. Like, that is how you do it. It's all of that. It's that writing over and over and over again.
I mean, at the very least, I was getting in, like, you know, they say like the 10,000 hours. I was getting a lot of those in.
Just in query letters.
I was going to say unevenly, perhaps, but.
It's impressive. It's amazing.
So tell us about this rejection letter. What was it that changed your life in that letter?
Well, I will remember it forever because I was so excited because it was my first full request. And I was like, I've arrived. It's happened. After all this time.
Yeah. Keep going though.
I didn't notice for a while, I guess. The pattern. I've arrived. It's happened. I was so excited. Like, you know, whole body shaking, your butt flutters for weeks kind of thing. Just waiting for the response. And I finally get it. And I was like, and like scramble onto my mom's computer to check my email. And I look at it and she says, thank you for sharing this with me. You know, blah, 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 polite, polite. And then the part that isn't like the rote.
Right, response, where
she's like, I thought from the query that the manuscript would be better written.
Oh.
And I was like,
But that's great. We all do. That's great. Could you imagine never having gotten that letter?
Yeah.
Right? And just still working under this
level.
Yes.
This assumption. So what, when you got that, what, it obviously hit you, but what changed? What steps did you take from there?
Yeah, well, I think that was the first moment I realized, oh, so I'm not as good as I think I am. And that was like the big bubble pop moment, you know. And it was the sort of like concept, because I was the only one building my concept of what it means to arrive, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
No one in my family had ever done anything like this. I lived in the middle of nowhere, Tennessee. No one else I knew was doing anything like this. I was the weird child because I wanted to be a published author, you know, and they were like, oh, weird, okay. Yeah. And I was like, why is that weird? Are your heroes not authors?
The answer should be yes.
The answer is yes, guys.
Your heroes should not be authors? Is that what you're saying?
No, should be.
Should be. That's what I'm trying to say.
And because of that, I hadn't really had any external things. And it was hard. Like I remember I was checking out books from the library and using my very slow internet to try to learn anything. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the moment where I realized, oh, I'm not as good as I think I am. And I need to get better. And that's when I started to like work harder. But I also entered college just about right after that. So it was a good time.
Yeah.
English classes, things like that. I majored in English, so good things like that.
Good.
And I started using more resources outside of myself as well. I went to like the writing group on campus, things like that. And I was in this awkward place in college where I was a better writer than most of the people I knew, even in the writers group. Some people were like, wow, we don't usually see things this good.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, thanks. And they're helping me point out like, look, your comma's missing. And I was like, thanks. But I also knew I wasn't good enough now because of that query. And that like haunted me, but I don't mean it in a negative way even, but where I'm like, okay, well, if I'm not good enough, I want to get good enough.
And this is when revision started.
Yes. Well. I still wasn't really doing that, honestly. Like,
Can I interrupt for just a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
I had a conversation one time with Jennifer Nielsen, and I I literally loathed the process of querying uh-huh. because it was just so much no. And I don't right. like that much no. It hurts, you know? Mm-hmm. Like that's when you start going, oh, rejection sensitivity dysphoria, whatever. Okay, mm-hmm. I just didn't enjoy that part at all. And I was talking to her and she was like, oh, Shelley, I wouldn't have traded that part for anything. And what she described was what you're describing, you know? She's like, that's when I grew the most. And that's when I learned the most. And that's when I was the most humble. That's when I was ready to actually learn. And sometimes it's in that refiner's fire, like kind of the ugly part.
Yes.
Because when you said it haunted you, I thought of that. I was like, yeah, it kind of haunts you. That you're like, no, I'm not settling for this. I've got to do better.
Yes, yes, exactly. I think I gave a keynote once at LTW where I was talking all about the necessity of popping your bubble, because if you don't pop them, they crystallize mm-hmm. into snow globe dreams that never get broken and are inaccessible and far away, you know? And I was like, I didn't want that.
That was so symbolic.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Good imagery.
I've seen for young writers, kind of them falling into one of two categories, which is only revisions and never revisions,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Where somebody yes. will still be working on that same book that they started at 14 years yep. old,
yes.
and they're revising it and they're revising it and revising it, and you have to be like, hey, you've got other yeah. stories. Go tell those stories, and if you really need to come back to it eventually, go for it. And then ones like you where it's just like, just I'm going to do one draft and move on. And if you just can't see the genius in it, then this isn't for
then we're
you.
Moving on. That's old
yeah.
news.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. I was like,
so tell us the good part where you like, got picked up.
Okay. Okay. Well,
you're in college.
Yes.
You're almost revising.
I am taking revision notes from previous manuscripts and applying them to new manuscripts.
Oh, nice. But on yeah. the first draft of the new manuscript.
Yeah. I'm like, I still leave it there, but I'm learning every time.
Right, right, right.
And it's collecting, it's growing, it's stacking. And then I actually interned for Jollyfish Press for a while. I was actually in the marketing section, not in the editorial. But the editor was like, hey, I've heard you talk about your thing. I'll read it if you'd like. And I was like, yes, please. And try not to hyperventilate on her. Yeah. And she reads it for me and she comes back with like, this isn't ready. And let me tell you why. And she specified, like, was really specific. This was the most useful thing someone had done for me, like, in this period of time, where she was like, your plots are weak is the problem. Your structure's very, like, for the first third of this book, it's a rom-com, and then the last two thirds are, like, a political thriller.
Right.
And, like, you can do both, but they're not merging.
I'd read that, though.
Yeah.
You think you'd read it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
The execution, questionable. The idea is cool. And a few other things, too, but mostly it was so helpful for someone to finally tell me specifically what my weaknesses were.
Mm-hmm.
And so my next manuscript after that.
Wait. Uh-huh. You're telling me after you get this feedback, the first thing you do is you ditch that one and then you start a brand new manuscript.
Well, not completely. That was the very first manuscript I ever revised. But that
okay.
was only because I had sent it out and a bunch of agents had like requested it, and one agent requested an R&R. So that was the first time I revised a manuscript was before an R&R from an agent.
Wow. Which R&R means?
Yeah, revise and resubmit.
And yes. that
it's
is
an
pretty
opportunity.
Far.
Which is,
yeah.
which is encouraging.
Yeah. Honestly, getting an yeah. R&R is a big deal. That,
yeah.
That is an almost yes.
Yes. That's like, I want to say yes, but you need to convince me a little more.
Right,
like,
right,
okay.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Show me you can do it.
Yeah. And it was one of like a very stressful experience. I don't enjoy revision as much as the initial draft usually.
Right.
We've noticed. There's
nothing in your history that would say
how
that's
did you
true.
Know?
Shocking.
But so I revised and resubmitted that. But in typical me fashion, I was like, all the things I learned with that, I'm going to now write another thing while they're reading that.
Mm-hmm.
And I applied all of the things that I learned with that, which was like, okay, I struggle with plots. Clearly, I don't totally understand the sort of mathematical approach other people are doing.
Right.
So instead, I will pick a thing that I love from anime, which is the tournament arc shown in anime.
Nice.
And I was like, that's three round thing. you're trying to win for blank reason. Now, there's a whole bunch of things that actually inspired this story that are separate. But when I was approaching it, I was like, you need a clear structure
for yourself. Sure, you had like a ton of creativity, but it needed a structure.
Yes, so that was the one I chose. And it kind of probably boils down to three-act structure when it comes down to it.
Sure.
But like I chose
anime
that.
Anime helps your brain.
Yeah,
to know.
I was like, three-act structure.
Oh, you mean the anime structure?
If you mean the tournament arc, I got that. I know what that trope is. and so I compiled that, and that became Cicero Rios and the Desert of Souls.
Oh, nice.
I like how you say that.
Thank you.
Say it one more time.
Cicero Rios and the Desert of Souls.
Because I always call it Cici.
I actually like that, too, for the record.
It's a great book.
She's named after my cousin, and she's calls herself Cece, so okay. You know, but it's Cece, Cece, it's cute. It's cute either way, so that's why it I like is. It.
It's a great book. And then how did you get somebody to pick it up?
Yeah, okay. Well, that was such a fun experience. There used to be this thing called Pitch Wars.
I can't
right?
tell if you're lying or telling the truth. Was it a fun experience or was it hard?
No. Okay, well, I mean, I guess it's kind of both. But
I thought she was lying about Pitch Wars.
No, Pitch Wars.
This sounds like a lie to me.
That doesn't sound like a real thing.
I totally Pitch Warred plenty.
Yes. Okay, so I had Pitch Warred before. I like that, Shelley. I had Pitch Warred. Two previous times, and I'd been an alternate, I think, both times, right? And this time I applied again, and I think this was like the last year they even did it, right? But I applied and I got feedback from people because I got a lot of requests from different authors who were like, let me read it and see if I can help you, if I'll be your mentor. And I was like, ooh, I've got more people asking for it this year. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
And then I got responses back, and all of them were turning it down. And at first I was like, no. And then they said, because I don't know how to help you. It's that good. And I was like, no one's ever said that to me before. That's a good sign. So I got really excited because of that. In fact, there was only one piece of feedback one of them gave me. And she was like, you're ending. She does have to actually get the thing she set out for in the beginning. You kind of cut it off.
Oh, right, spoiler. Spoiler.
No, that's not there anymore.
Okay. It's good.
And I was like, oh, okay. That's a good idea. I'll take that. So I revised that in a weekend, I believe. And then...
You might have been taking too many hints from anime. Because yeah. Anime doesn't feel
does
like you do
time.
Need to get what
you do actually have to get there at some point, guys. One Piece, we have to arrive at some point. And then I think it was like maybe a month later or something, there was this thing called Pitch America. That only ran for a couple of years. Now, the agent that was reviewing my previous work, which was called Dangerous to Go Alone, which is, you know, a little link quote.
Yes.
Which is also something I'm hoping to revise in the future now that I'm practiced. she was reviewing my revise and resubmit at this time, and I had met her, or she had requested it the previous year Pitch America. And I entered it again because it was the same time again. And then she and a bunch of others requested it, and then I got three offers of representation on CC.
Fantastic.
Yeah, nice. And I was like, oh my gosh, I never thought this would be me. And which was funny because the confidence of the 14-year-old.
Me?
Yeah, I was like.
And how old are you at this point?
Okay, at this point, oh my gosh, how old was I?
I stumped her, you
calculations,
guys.
Calculations.
I have to do math.
You know, roughly is okay too.
It was 2017. How old am I?
Now everybody's gonna know.
Wow. Don't make us do math. This is your homework, not ours.
Roughly.
Okay. I think
you can revise the age if it doesn't work.
I was 24.
Okay.
Wait, no, I was 24 when I got the book deal, which was the next year. So I was 23.
That's awesome.
I was 23 years old. And I was sitting there like struggling. It was because I remember it being very stressful to have three offers. It's a thing that you think this is great. This is suffering from success. But I was also like, my life is in my hands right now. I have to pick right. My future career is at stake. And I went through.
Which was kind of true. Right?
Yes,
I mean,
yes,
don't downplay that. It's huge.
Yeah,
it's huge who you pick.
It really is.
Yes. And so I had to.
So name the losers first.
No.
they were all great options in different ways. But I ended up choosing Serene Hakim, who had been the one who offered me the R&R on Dangerous to Go Alone, the previous manuscript.
Been giving you like encouragement for a while.
Yeah. So. Well, and she, I liked her editorial notes the best, and she seemed to understand what I was trying to achieve in my work the best, like just the most aligned. I wasn't intimidated to approach her, but I also knew she was like, she's located in New York and she's got like a really big mentorship and connections.
When you say you liked her editorial notes the best, does that mean she had the fewest?
No,
so
no.
You didn't have to revise as much, or
tempting. Yeah. But no, I think I'd like sort of accepted that was going to be required at this point. But I liked her editorial notes the best because they were the most in line. Like some people were like, I think we should just get rid of the tournament, and I was like, no, I don't know what to do if we don't have the tournament. I'm not that skilled yet.
I'm glad you did not.
You've heard of the tournament really arc, right?
I was like, it's kind of the entire structure of the book. I don't know what to do if we get rid of it. Okay. But there was just a lot. And I liked what she said about Dangerous to Go Alone as well, which has still been years worth of like, how do I fix these problems? Yeah. How do I make it not one third rom-com, two thirds political thriller?
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm working on that in the background right now. But the... Yeah, so Serene was the one I wanted to choose because of her feedback, kind of showing me the way to achieve what I was trying to do rather than trying to take me in a different direction.
So you pick her up as an agent, or she picks you up as an author, and then she starts shopping CC around. What happened to the book after she got a hold of it?
Yeah, well, we were shopping it around. There was a whole bunch of different feedback on it. I think this is also sort of the era where we're shopping it. It's pre-2020, where people don't quite know what to do with CC. Because it's a fantasy, but it's set in like 1920s Mexico, but it's alternate world, right? And this sort of baffles the mind. And I don't even quite blame people.
What shelf do we put it on?
Yeah, where they're like, well, is it a fantasy though? And I was like, are you questioning the fact that there's shape-shifting like half skeletal people and it's a it's just not set in Britain.
Yeah.
It's still a fantasy, I promise.
Which is so interesting because that's one of the great things about it that like sets it aside as a unique. Fun, new, unique read, right? Yeah. But at the time, it was tricky for it, huh?
Right. Now, fortunately, the industry is sort of cresting at this period too, where it's starting to build up to like, let's like a big... like diversity, fantasy, middle grade moment, right? I don't know this at the time, of course. We just keep getting people being like, I don't know. And also a kind of, I guess, unexpected protagonist. She's not like, you know, Cece is very much not a bombastic,
power girl.
She's very not girl
reluctant,
boss.
A reluctant hero.
Yeah. Right? And mostly because she's like deeply insecure, but not even in like a charming way most of the time. Not where you're like, oh, she's so humble. She's just like literally like, I am trying my best.
So you're saying there's not like two guys trying to get her.
Right.
And, like,
and when she's secretly gorgeous.
She's like, I trip sometimes. Yeah. Are you sure.
This like is that. Insecure.
I like the
I'm
secretly
clumsy.
Gorgeous.
Right, yeah. Cece is genuinely awkward and genuinely afraid and very much a crybaby and highly sensitive person. And this was also hard to sell at the time.
Tell me why you chose those attributes for your protagonist.
Yeah, well, I think there was a lot of reasons in my personal life at the time as well. But I think it's because I've known and have been as well a sensitive person. And like... I see all the time sensitive people in a noisy and demanding world. Mm-hmm. And not just noisy and demanding, but sometimes cruel and sharp and hard. Mm-hmm. Demand that you only get to pick one. You either have to be kind and trodden down by everyone else, or you have to leave behind kind and get just as sharp and just as hard to survive. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is that it dulls all your senses. It burns off your nerves. And then you become
a shapeshifter.
Yeah.
you do that really well in the book. Like, I can see that. As you're describing it, I'm like, nope, I see it. I see all of that in the story.
Oh, thank you. It's coming across.
Yeah, for reals.
And that's kind of the whole thing that's... the battle going on for people's hearts in the book is that there are shapeshifters who are angry at humanity for how they have gotten hard and hot and burning in the way that they treat them. And then criaturas, the shapeshifters, become more hard and hot and burning. And it just escalates everything. And Cece, who is frequently called a soul like water throughout the book. And there's a whole thing throughout the book of like, who wants water? We're supposed to be a burning people. We live in the desert, which leads up to sort of a very battling question later, which is why would you be in the desert if it wasn't to learn to value water?
Right, right.
You know? And I think that's sort of where it goes. There's, you know, other themes throughout it that are also debates about sort of what do we do when people hurt us, and what do we do when we become the person who's hurting the people we love, mm-hmm. and things like that. And I wanted a very tender main character who was also strong to show people you can do both.
Yeah.
Because very often we're told pick one. Mm-hmm. You can only do one. And it's much harder to do both. But you can do both.
And it's important.
Yes, it's important to do both. Yeah. There is joy in doing both, even if it's hard. There is power in doing both, even though it's hard. And Cece's stories, as the trilogy go on, just deepens that, like, yes, even now. An author once, when I was in a interview with her, she once asked me, why did you pick a story with there's really scary things in Cece. You know, there's half skeleton women. There are shadow ghouls who steal children away in the night. You know, there are death tournaments. You know, et cetera, et cetera. They're very scary.
Scary
things.
Or awesome?
Yeah, both.
Scary, awesome.
Both. Why pick? these scary, awesome folk tales from Mexico and stuff like that. And one, of course, it helps bring in the fact that sort of frightening thing is a backdrop in Mexican culture, right? But also gives a very good backdrop to like a debate on kindness and do you really mean it? You know, because she was like, why would you put this really pretty high stakes backdrop and story and plot with a story that's about being kind? She's like, you don't usually see them together. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think that's why I picked it, though, is because I want to say, even when there is a ghoul, you know, it haunting the night, even when people are this scary, even this, even that, even then, I choose kindness.
Be kind.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, you spoiled the end of the story, which is that it became a trilogy. let's get this book published. So tell us, just walk us through this next step of getting this first book off the ground.
Yes. Okay. So of course I have absolutely no idea what to expect out of submission, but we talk about it and we're like, okay, do you want to know everything that happens? I was like, no, don't tell me everything that happens. Tell me when something good happens. Skip that, please. So, you know, I don't hear anything for a while. And, you know, she does occasionally just be like, hey, there is feedback in the document if you want to see it. And most of the time I'm like, no, thanks. and then occasionally I'm like, I can't resist. I have to go see. And see, you know, people sort of reacting to this oddball. But most people still also say, we're passing on this, but we look forward to seeing it once it hits shelves. Like, there's a confidence that someone
it's going
to
make
know.
It, just not with us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then I believe it was just after summer when HarperCollins Children's calls up and they have a new acquiring editor, Stephanie, and she really likes the book. But she's also this is her first book she'd ever acquired.
Okay.
She does not have the pull in the house, right? Mm-hmm. So she comes back to us and has a discussion. She's like, would you revise this? And I was like, oh no.
That's the one thing I will not do.
You have found my weakness. You found it so quickly. And she's like, would you revise this for these things so that I can take it to the board and they will be more confident about it,
right,
to the acquisitions room meeting. I always imagine it's a really big, scary boardroom. I've never actually seen it. So, yeah. And I was like, yes, I will. At this point, I'm definitely not letting revising getting in the way.
Right.
Gonna have to do it. So I take it, and most of it is world building. Some of it, very little of it is plot, but most of it is that like last sort of quarter pinch point sort of thing. I don't even know if I'm using pinch point right still.
No, but I think a lot of people hear world building and go, yeah, but how do you do it?
Yeah.
Right. When you get world building notes, what are those notes? Just give me some specifics when we talk about adding world building to, because what you've described to us so far is it feels like
a huge world.
Nothing but world building. And to get a note like that back, I could see being like, didn't I do that? Is it like
or that changes everything?
Yeah. So
do the same thing. Just put it in ancient Japan.
And you don't have to do a ton of it, but give us just a kind of a little flavoring of what world building was missing and what you were able to add to the story.
Yeah. Well, it was sort of a like, oh, okay. I didn't know it wasn't good sort of thing. But it was actually also really helpful because I also didn't understand what she meant by like, well, what do you mean improve the world building? But she gave me really specific notes and they were things that made me realize, oh, I'm apparently a soft magic gal.
Gotcha.
I have soft edges in my world. There are things you don't quite understand. And I like that feeling. In all of my first drafts will have it.
Yeah.
Where you're sort of like, well, is it this or is it that? And I'm like, it's a good question.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Nobody knows.
So you're saying that the magic world wasn't explained enough for the reader.
Yes. Yeah. Where I'm like, it wasn't.
Or the rules weren't explained enough. Yeah.
Exactly. Like there weren't crosswalks. You didn't have the option to press the button. There weren't any red lights and, you know, stop signs of how to navigate the world in a more graspable way for somebody else. I also realized that that was pretty important because most people aren't familiar with Mexican folklore. And I dig into even Aztec mythology and things like that. So there wasn't more of that needed. Like I needed to explain or even briefly, even quickly explain like, no, people go by their mother's last names here. That was a thing in Mexico for most of its time. Right. They still have their mother's last names as technically the last name. And there were things like, well, is the sun like actually dead or is it like, is it the sun? Is it the actual sun? And I was like, it's magic like, realism. It's fine.
Like, as an author, do I need to know these things?
Yeah, I was like, I don't understand why you're even asking this question. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that people will bring up in my first drafts, just like she did, where they're like, well, is it this or is it that? And I was like, I kind of like the fact that we don't know. Like, you don't know? And I was no.
And they were like, we're going to need to know.
I need you to know.
That's what we need to.
I talk with sometimes like new writers and we'll talk about the questions and I'll be like, there's good questions like mysteries that you're like, oh my goodness, how's this going to end? Who really is their father? Like, you know, good questions. And then there's bad questions like, is this a boy or a girl? I'm halfway through this book and I think it's a girl, but this whole time I've thought it was a boy.
Yes.
You know, like
without that even being a point in the book or anything.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know who is this.
I am lost. Everything I've envisioned is wrong and you didn't explain anything. Yeah.
Like is it their dad or not their dad? Is it
is
their
this
uncle?
An adult or a child?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I think that helped me get better boundaries on what other people kind of expected from fantasy versus sort of like how I feel about fantasy on a personal level. And so I got harder edges in the book. I don't even like to say it that way. I got like clearer rules into the book.
More defined where magic understand. Rules. Yeah.
Fortified. Yeah. I fortified the rules for people.
Nice.
And that really helped. That included things like, I don't know. Is that a spoiler? defining some of the sort of like brujería and the curanderismo. I always want to call it an A. Yeah, and nailing in a few more explanations where Cece just sort of slides in stuff. Like, no, we know that, you know, like, you know, Devil's Alley opens up once a year and all of the mythological ghouls, dark criaturas and shapeshifter criaturas, different kinds of criaturas flood out, you know.
As we know.
But
as
now there's a rule that you have written in. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And the reader knows it.
Yeah. And like actually that was a good example. The fact that they were all criaturas. Well, actually they were all called demons first. And then I was like, they were like, I don't think you should call them. I was like, okay, fair.
Welcome to middle grade.
Yeah. I was like, good idea. I'll just call it creatures.
Yeah. In Spanish. You're going to have to wait for 2025 when K-pop demon hunters come out. Yeah. Before we can start accessible. Doing demon stuff. But yeah.
Exactly.
But you're a few years off that. Exactly. Well, We are getting close to the end of our first episode. So good news, bad news. Bad news is we need to wrap this up. The good news is
that was awesome.
Is we have you for the next 3 months or whatever. Woo! You know, we used to say it that way because we knew how we'd release these. We don't know anymore. I'm mulling it over if we're going to release these all together or it'll probably be.
It builds anticipation.
It'll be interreleased with other episodes that we record with Brandon. And so that's just fine. So we are going to continue this conversation for a couple more episodes. So look forward to that in the future. We will let you know that book did get published.
It did get picked up.
And we'll talk a little bit more about some of your other works as well as we go along in this conversation. But before we close, what is coming up? What do we need to know? What should the listeners be looking forward to? I know you have a new book coming out in a few months. So just kind of give us the pitch on that book coming out and what they need to know about it.
Yes. Okay. So, The Hungry Forest by me.
Kayla Rivera will
be coming out in August 18th this year, 2026. I'm so excited. It's my first middle grade horror. You know, Cece was actually nominated for a horror award at some point. It's not a horror. That one confused me. And I was like, oh, okay. But this one actually is intentional. This one's an intentional horror.
This one
horror.
Is horrific.
This one is, this one's truly spooky. It's middle grade spooky. Yeah, it's my spooky, but it's spooky. And it is about two boys. Brothers who lose their father at the beginning of the book and are dealing with their sort of improperly digested grief. But they keep hearing his voice call from the forest. And everybody knows not to go into this forest in the middle of South Carolina, Traveler's Rest, because people have been going missing for decades. And their own father was a search and rescue guy and told them never go into the forest. But they keep hearing his voice, and one day they just can't resist and go inside. And once they go inside, they discover that the urban legend's not a legend at all. It's completely true. There are masked monsters, face like covered trees, devious people, and curses all around them. And they have one night to get out, because if the sun rises while they're still in there, they're stuck in there forever. They'll have to stay ahead of all of the monsters and face all of their fears, including each other, and their grief, and everything else they don't want to process, including the monsters in themselves, in order to make it out alive.
Well, nice. that sounds awesome. Thanks for that pitch. It comes out when?
August 18th.
And you can pre-order now?
Yes, you can pre-order now.
If I wanted to do that, where would I go?
You should go to the King's English. They can ship anywhere, including internationally. And you will, if you pre-order from the King's English, I will sign it. And you'll get like a cute swag, like a bookmark or something. Haven't designed them yet, but trust me.
It'll be good. Well, Kayla, it was so great having you on the show. Thanks for being here.
I do have one more thing I'd love to say. StoryCon and Operation Literacy has summer camps. So if you're one of these kids like Kayla and you think you could use a little bit of extra help, we have summer camps. Go to storycon.org and look around and see if any of that looks fun to you. They're all based here in Utah, but it's a lot of fun.
I've taught at them. It's fantastic. Please go. Even if you are a genius, you could still do with the support.
Even if you don't need to revise.
Even if you don't revise, it'll be great.
8 to 18 years old. So lots of room in there.
Very good. Well, thanks everyone for joining us on another episode of Mulling It Over without Brandon Mull.